Preliminary comment. Please treat us gently because the process has been a little bit disjointed and different bits of information have had to be brought up into our head. And acoustic evidence at the best of times is challenging to people who are not specialists, so just bear that in mind.
Thank you. It's challenging to people who are specialists as well, so I'll try and I'll try and make it as straightforward as I possibly can. And please, if you don't understand, I'm failing, so let me know. So I have prepared a Section 42A technical report on noise issues. This summary statement responds to matters that have been discussed during the hearing. Where I discuss conditions... Sorry, there is feedback there. This sounds quite loud. Could you, is there feedback for the commissioners there? Is it? No, you're all right? I'm an acoustic consultant. Feedback, I don't like it at all. It certainly has. See, it's there. Hear it? Where I discuss conditions, I refer to the requiring authorities' conditions of the 13th of August, which I understand is the set the panel is using. And to confuse matters, where I refer to the Section 42A officers' recommended conditions, these are the set at the start of the hearing, dated 9th of August. Although I've been advising Ms. Cobblestone on changes during the hearing, and the Section 42A recommended conditions largely incorporate recommendations from my Section 42A report. And I've got the new set as well, and I've informed. We've been discussing those. I've been discussing those with Ms. Cobblestone on an ongoing basis, so I'm aware of what's in those two.
In terms of the compare and
contrast exercise, should we have up the 13 August 21 and the draft of the 29th of September as the useful compare and contrast versions, or do you want something else up as well?
So it's the reference in this in my summary report is the 13th of August for the requiring authority and the 9th of August for the officer's recommended conditions. That's the current.
Yes, that's the current.
I'm sure I've updated all the references in your statement to the letter C.
Did you?
Yeah. I did it for you.
Okay, so I've... Ms. Cobblestone has very helpfully updated the references to the latest set of conditions.
So we now compare and contrast between 29 September and 13th of August.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes it slightly simpler.
Yes.
We'll see how we go.
It's good to know what you're looking at.
Well, she didn't change the 9th of August in paragraph 2, which is which is what's causing me an issue here. And I note that I have conference with Dr. Charles, and we prepared a joint witness statement, and that was dated the 19th of August, 2021. And in my Section 42A report, I described the designation and identified that noise and vibration issues will arise from road traffic, construction activities, and the operational activities of the freight hub. Just briefly on the existing oral environment, submitters neighbouring the freight hub described the existing environment as a relatively quiet rural environment. Now, I agree that this description is mostly supported by... And I agree that this description is mostly supported by the environmental noise monitoring that was undertaken by the by Dr. Charles and his assistant. Turning to the perimeter road, the closest dwellings on the western side, Tenaya Road and Cleverly Lane, will experience an increase in road traffic on the new perimeter road where no road traffic previously existed. There is likely to be a high percentage of heavy traffic on this road. Noise mitigation measures include a stone mastic asphalt road surface and acoustic barriers. Dr. Charles agrees that a condition should be included requiring quiet road surfacing for the perimeter road, and he recommends the terminology and asphaltic mix. I agree with this and note that this has been included in the requiring authority's conditions at 90C5. Submitters ask that, on the west side of the designation, the proposed noise barrier be located to the west of the perimeter road to also screen their dwellings. And I considered this to be reasonable to screen the noise of heavy vehicles on this road. Now, in Dr. Charles' evidence in 916, he explains that placing the barrier to the west of the perimeter road would mean that it would be too low to screen noise sources on the site and should not be moved to the west of the road. And I accept that the main noise barrier should not be at the edge of the at-grade area of the freight hub if the topography would make it otherwise ineffective. But having the barrier to the west of the new perimeter road would screen dwellings on Tenaya Road and Cleverly Lane. And I've lately looked at sections 3, 4 and 5 of the... So that's the evidence that was given on visual landscape and visual by Lisa Rimmer. It appears there is potential to achieve putting the barrier to the west of the road. And I've put in figure one there, one of those sections which shows where the road, where if you put the barrier to the west of the perimeter road, you'll see it will drop down into an area. So that would mean that the landform would have to be extended somewhat to keep it at the correct height. But the potential is there to do that. It doesn't fall away immediately. But I accept this would be a part of the detailed design stage of the freight hub. Turn to construction noise. Construction noise is to be measured, assessed and controlled by reference to NZS 6803. Construction activity involves the use of heavy construction equipment for bulk earthworks over a three-year period plus 3 years for the construction of Stage 1. There will be further construction activities for Stage 2 and Stage 3. This will represent a major change to the aural environment that is currently enjoyed by the people in this area. No predictions have been made of construction noise, and 50 metres and 200 metres buffer areas have been developed based on Dr. Charles' experience with comparable works on numerous other projects. Buffer areas are normally empty tracts of land that are used to buffer noise-sensitive neighbours, but in this case there are dwellings inside the buffer area. Some of these dwellings may be exposed to noise levels that exceed the construction standards, but there's no indication where or when this might occur. Care needs to be taken that high construction noise does not become a regular feature at any noise-sensitive location. The acoustic assessment identifies that enhanced mitigation might be required to maintain compliance with the construction noise and vibration limits. Does not go into any detail on any of these measures or of the timing or their practicality. Heavy vehicles associated with construction works will be significant and are difficult to regulate on the surrounding road network. The requiring authority's draft condition 65A seeks to do this by limiting numbers of heavy vehicles through key areas at night, but provides no guidelines around how this would be achieved. Now, except this would be difficult to achieve by way of conditions. Acoustic assessment considers that it is practicable for construction works near to houses to be undertaken during daytime only. This would limit the hours for noisy equipment to 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. I originally recommended that to remove any doubt, these hours of construction activities should be included in a condition. But given the size and scale of the project, I anticipate that there would be pressure from earth-moving contractors to operate on the fringes of daytime hours, especially during the summer months. And this might be possible while still meeting the noise limits in the construction noise standard. This could shorten the overall duration of the construction works. There have been no predictions made in the acoustic assessment regarding construction noise, and this would need to be done if construction work was to be undertaken outside of daytime hours. Requiring authorities draft conditions 68 and 69 require that the requiring authority prepare and implement a construction noise management plan, with the objective being to achieve compliance with conditions 71 and 72, which set out noise and vibration limits. Draft condition 72A of the section 42A recommended conditions, which I support, highlights that nighttime construction work that exceeds the limits should only take place if they cannot be practicably undertaken during the day and require a specific noise assessment to determine appropriate mitigation measures. The assessment must be undertaken by a suitably qualified and experienced person. Draft condition 72A also requires sensitive receivers to be notified and a copy of this information to be provided for council. This condition accepts that there may be times when nighttime construction work is inevitable and sets out to minimise any adverse impacts. The requiring authority's draft condition 71A requires that nighttime construction works only take place if it is impractical to do them in the daytime. Measures to assess and control these works for notification of sensitive receivers are provided for in the Construction Noise and Vibration Management Plan as condition 73. But I consider that nighttime construction works that exceed the construction noise and vibration levels would have a high risk of impacting on the health and well-being of residents, and therefore I prefer that all of these matters be included in a single condition, similar to draft condition 72A of the section 42A recommended conditions. Turning to operational noise, the acoustic assessment of the freight hub identifies that operational noise emissions will be a significant impact for the neighbours to the designation. Dwellings located between the predicted 55 dBA LEAQ 1 hour and designation boundary will be exposed to nighttime levels that exceed the criterion in Category C, and as such will experience noise that is incompatible with residential activity. Considering the significance of this effect, I've previously expressed my opinion that a larger designation would have provided landowners with better opportunities, including the ability to ask the requiring authority to purchase their dwellings. I also noted that a larger designation would also prevent the further establishment of inconsistent land uses, which risks further establishment of potentially incompatible use of land in the time leading up to either the freight hub, to when either the freight hub is built or a district plan change can be progressed. And this may be made worse with lengthy lapsed dates. I heard the panel's discussion with Dr. Charles about this topic, and whether this type of commentary or opinion is appropriate. I would simply say that had I been advising Kiwi Rail on noise issues in preparation of this NOR, I would have advised it that these NOR provisions should have been widened on account of the predicted significance of the noise effects. And I understand that there are difficulties with expanding the boundaries now, and that is not my recommendation. The point is that these significant noise effects will remain with little option for the landowners but to accept reduced oral amenity compared to what they currently enjoy. Hearing neighbours' submissions about their concerns about noise, uncertainty and lack of meaningful options have reinforced my opinion about this. Several submitters have eloquently expressed concerns about noise and the lack of options they face if they decide that they are not prepared to accept the reduced oral amenity. Monitoring has now been undertaken of freight train marshalling and assembly attached to Dr. Charles' evidence as Appendix A. Dr. Charles states that these are essentially the same as levels previously assessed from other aspects of the freight hub, and the results do not alter the indicative noise contours or my assessment findings. My concern, though, has always been that the contours are predicted as LEQ 1 hour, i.e., the sound level averaged over a 1 hour duration, and the shunting activities generate the noise that is potentially impulsive in nature and is measured as LAF max. So that's the maximum sound level at any time. The reassurance I was seeking from further monitoring was to determine if this impact noise will cause sleep disturbance beyond that assessed using the 1 hour LAEQ. But from these measurements, I estimate that noise levels at the nearest dwellings on Sangsters Road will experience between 70 to 75 dB LMAX from shunting impact noise at the closest track, and noise levels will be well below the 85 dB LMAX limit in the requiring authority's draft condition 85, table 3, at the noise management boundary. I estimate the noise management boundary to be approximately 360 metres away from the nearest train track in the marshalling yard. The implication is, therefore, that the freight hub operational noise will comply with both the 55 dB LAEQ 1 hour and the 85 dB LMAX noise limits at the noise management boundary. The acoustic assessment derives noise criteria specifically for the freight hub, which is significantly less stringent than the district plan rural zone limits. Category A criteria are claimed to be similar to the noise allowed from the northeast industrial zone. From the northeast industrial zone, while the Category A limits are numerically the same, there are differences in the averaging times for individual measurements, duration corrections, and the assessment location, whereby northeast industrial zone limits apply at other site boundaries outside of the zone rather than at the notional boundaries of dwellings. Dr. Charles now agrees that penalties for special audible characteristics such as bangs and squeals should be applied when assessing any of the categories. Any noise with special audible characteristics will be more intrusive than noise without and more likely to cause sleep disturbance. The Mid-Central Health Board submission 6 for the penalty for special audible characteristics to be applied and for noise assessments to be made in accordance with 6802. If the noise being measured exhibited special audible characteristics, then this would result in the modelled contours increasing by 5 decibels, e.g. the 55 dB contour would become the 60 dB contour. Council's Section 42A draft conditions include assessment of special audible characteristics should they be present, but there has been no adjustment to the location of the predicted contours. The requiring authority's recommended draft condition 85A sought to restrict the way in which special audible characteristics are assessed so that only objective methods are used. Dr. Charles now agrees that special audible characteristics should be assessed in accordance with 6802, and we agree that, if appropriate, designed and managed, the freight hub can operate without generating these, and therefore the contour doesn't have to be changed. I consider that the New Zealand standards should not be manipulated unless they are clearly deficient in some way, and special audible characteristics are assessed using the methodology set out in Appendix B of 6802, which provides for objective methods to be used where there is doubt about the presence of tonality. I note there is not an objective test for impulse noise in Appendix B of 6802. While I've agreed with Dr. Charles that the freight hub can be operated without special audible characteristics being generated, this does not mean that the operation should be assumed to not have them. This is because special audible characteristics could arise either through poor design of the operations or from activities taking place carelessly. While the latter would be best controlled using a noise management plan, the ultimate recourse for both poor design and careless management of the operation would be enforcement action with reference to the notice of requirement noise conditions. This could be applied to the impulsive noise of marshalling activities if trains, wagons regularly collide at unnecessary speed, and the dropping of containers or logs. The potential of the application of penalties for presence of special audible characteristics should be a necessary deterrent. A noise management boundary is proposed by Dr. Charles that approximates and smooths the modelled 55 dB LAEQ 1-hour noise contour. This is the daytime criteria for the derived Category C criteria from the acoustic assessment. That's not true. Can you just give me a second? So this is the daytime criteria. For the derived Category B criteria in the acoustic assessment. So the daytime criteria for the Category C is 65. And the daytime criteria for Category B is 55 to 65. So that's the baseline criteria for Category B.
Do you want to just tell them exactly what letters to change in that paragraph?
I'm just going to see where I go from making that assumption, if that's all right. So what I should have said in 32 is that this is the nighttime criteria for the derived Category C criteria. I've already got it confused, obviously, so I'm not helping.
If you look at Visual Bundle, tab 5, figure 1, proposed noise management boundary.
Yes.
This is the diagram that's proposed to be inserted in the conditions which will be the governing boundary.
Yes.
And are you trying to describe in paragraph 32... how that was derived, or what are you explaining to us about that?
So that is the 55 dBA 1-hour limit. So what I'm trying to say is how that relates back to the derived criteria in the assessment that Dr. Charles has done.
So in that typology, you agree with the assessment in terms of its categorisation? It's a useful typology?
Yes.
And the category B is 55 to 65?
Daytime.
Daytime.
And the category C is 65 during the daytime and 55 at nighttime.
Right. Okay.
And because it's a 24-hour operation, this 55 dB could occur either during the daytime or at nighttime.
Right.
Which is what makes it different from LDN and LA.
Yeah. Yeah. So this noise boundary is a 55 irrespective of time.
Exactly.
Right.
That's the maximum noise that would be generated from the freight hub on a 24-hour basis in one-hour increments.
And that's an appropriate way to design a boundary, noise boundary?
Yes.
Yeah. And so functionally, within that boundary, the properties that are within that boundary, I mean, bearing in mind that the creation of a boundary implicitly creates a noise gradient.
Yes.
And so within that boundary, there will be a gradient of noise exceeding those standards.
Yes.
Some of which would be in category C and some of which would be in category B.
So, again, looking at... So category C, daytime, is 55 to 65.
Right.
And what we've said, Dr. Charles and I have agreed that we don't get more than 65 beyond the boundary of the site.
Site.
As it's predicted.
So do you agree on the boundary of the site or the notional boundary?
We've agreed on the boundary of the site.
So you've agreed that?
Yes.
Yes.
In the joint witness statement.
Yeah.
So we can say that between, and this is why this is important, that it is at the boundary of the site, that anything that's existing or will be built between the noise boundary and the boundary of the site will be exposed to noise levels between 55 and 65.
Yes.
Which is daytime category B, but nighttime category C.
And this is where I find this quite confusing, because you say category C is incompatible with residential activity, but it relates principally to a nighttime situation where people are in their house typically.
Well, yes, but evening is 60. So there is an area closer to the, between the 60 and 65, where you're in category C for evenings when the sound levels are generally getting quieter.
So is that the edge where there is a potential rub for you and Dr. Charles? Because it seems to me that if you get the sound, I mean, acknowledging that it's not a small thing not to have to open your windows, because
yes.
I'll put my hand up and say I'm an inveterate window opener. even in the middle of winter, I like fresh air circulating. But recognising that's an impact,
yep.
If people are mainly in their house, and you have noise insulation, the fact that it's category C is to overstate the ability to provide a solution. In other words, it can be dealt with.
Yes.
And the incompatibility is a solution. You're looking to focus in a solution. But in that area between evening and nighttime, that's where... you're saying we're really more in the 60 range, where it's sort of a cusp. And my question is that, are you describing that as incompatible with residential use?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's those houses, for example, on Sangster Road, which are right next to the right next to the site. I'm not saying, you know, this designation should have been expanded for hundreds and hundreds of metres. I'm spotting houses that are over 60, you know, that potentially over 60 decibels, and they're not actually predicted to be over 60 if you look at those the numbers they've got on them. They're all around 59, and they don't actually go over 60. Nothing existing seems to go over 60. But if it did, it would be allowed to do that because the criteria at the boundary is 65,
yeah.
And then you've got your 55. So we're allowing the noise level to spread to over 60 to those closest houses on Sangsters Road, and those are the ones that this is what I'm about, is saying, well,
right. So
why wasn't something done about these houses?
You know? Yeah. So I respect that, because I think one function of the law is to help the people that are most affected by the activity of either the state or an individual. So I think that's part of a function of the law. So I have no problem with that whatsoever. But drilling down into that detail, are we essentially looking at a number of houses on Sangsters Road which are causing the level of discomfort you're expressing?
Yes.
So tell me what those houses are.
Well, they're in, if you look, go on from your... the bundle and the noise management boundary, the next two give contour.
No, that's not in my bundle, anyway. But are you taking us to, maybe if you have a copy, is there a copy of the bundle, this bundle available? Okay. So what I'm looking at is the mitigated bundle, mitigated model, 3rd of August 21. So noise modelling with mitigation, figure 4 of Dr. Charles' evidence.
Yes.
Is that what you're referring me to?
So his evidence, yes. So that's with the noise mitigation in place. So these are from his memorandum that give a response to
information,
the request for further information.
So these are... Can you just tell me what the name of the one you're looking at is?
So...
Is it what figure number it is?
There's two we're looking at. So one's figure 2 and one's figure 3.
Okay. Well.
So figure 1 is the noise management plan. But they're just what you've got there, figure 4 of his evidence, blown up.
So I'm just going to have to follow you here. So my figure 2 in this bundle is the indicative operational noise with noise barriers, technical report D, figure 12.
Yes.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, so that's showing Sangsters Road.
Yes.
It's clearly a mitigation assessment. It's with mitigation.
Yes.
And there are a number of houses in Sangsters Road that are beneath that, or at the boundary, are beneath that, I think, 60 to 65 dB. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. So in the bottom right-hand corner of that, there's a 58 and 59 decibels for two houses. And then if you go to figure 3, there's two houses there that are both on 59. And then in the moving towards the southern end, there's a 56 and a 58. And the 56 may or may not be...
So 58 is... not 58 decibels, but number 58 on figure 3 is the property where the... sale of farming implements is made.
So yes, that's not a dwelling. That's
not
fine.
A dwelling. So that's all. Well, it may have a dwelling on it, but it's not. It's fine.
Remembering, these are predicted levels, and what we're allowing at these levels, they're close to the boundary, and we'd be allowing sound levels close to 65 decibels at these closest dwellings. So while the predicted level is 59. The conditions would allow levels close to 65 dB at these dwellings.
Close to what?
65 decibels.
Yeah.
At these dwellings.
Yeah.
because it's not until well, you not get
at
out.
At the site, you said, not the dwelling.
At the boundary of the site. Yeah, yeah. At the dwellings just beyond the boundary of the site. So the, those yeah, dwellings yeah. are very close to the boundary
yeah, yeah,
of the site.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you've got a fence.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So actually, right next to the boundary, the sound level is going to be, it's actually going to get louder to start off with because you're moving away from the shadow of the fence.
Yeah, I get you.
And so those houses...
So the predictions like a lot of things, when you set the conditions, we haven't got a condition that requires the predictions to be within... the noise levels to be within the prediction. It's the conditions that set the boundaries, so it could be slightly higher than what's predicted.
Yes. So those houses could be exposed to levels of 65 decibels or just less, according to what we've written as far as conditions are concerned.
Why do acousticians do that? They draw diagrams with a prediction, and then they set a condition which is actually not the prediction. I find that confusing because it's like the information comes out, you deal with that, and then actually it's not even how the conditions are framed.
Well, if you remember your discussion with Dr. Charles, he said that 65 did go outside, and it was only when we looked very closely at it we worked out that the noise levels that 65 did not go outside the boundary of the designation. So, and then we agreed that in the joint witness statement. So we've agreed that the noise level will not exceed 65 outside the designation. Therefore, that's become the default noise criteria.
Yeah.
That the level and 65 is the category C criteria for daytime.
Mm.
So it does have some relevance, but not nighttime.
Well, not evening.
And not evening. Not evening and not nighttime.
So you're happy that now there is a 65 dB because anything beyond that would be incompatible, so you've got that. But you still say there's a gradient where the effects are unsatisfactory from your point of view. And that would relate to how many properties?
So where the 60 would go, we haven't got a. We have got a criteria of 60.
Just give me a scale for what we're talking about here. What number of properties are in this? Vicinity of that concern, that cluster of concern that you're describing.
No more than 20.
No more than 20. As many as 20?
As an estimate.
Would it be as many as 20, given what we know about the Sangster's Road and the level of number of houses in it?
No, I don't. I think it would be less, significantly less than 20.
Yeah. And
the ones that are of concern are the ones over 55, as shown on those plans, really. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Maybe ten
houses.
Yes.
And
those are all the houses close to Sangster's Road.
Yeah.
That are next to the freight yard proper.
Yeah. Okay. And these potentially experience incompatible with residential or significant amenity effects at various times in the evening and so forth.
Yes.
And I just lost my train of thought on that, but just to drill down into those 10 houses, that assessment is a worst case scenario?
Yes.
And the worst case scenario is based on a model of the maximum use of the site.
Yes.
And if the maximum use of the site is simply a tool that doesn't represent the development of the acoustic landscape over time, it doesn't describe the development of the acoustic landscape over time, it is a snapshot of a fully developed site.
Yes. But the noise level, once the site is developed, the noise levels could be expected in any busy 1 hour to start approaching those maximum criteria.
Yeah.
Remembering that you've got to double the activity level to make a 3 dB difference.
Yeah. And given that worst case scenario model will be functionally related to the nature of the scale, character and intensity of activity, to what extent does that functional relationship mean that the worst case scenario will be predicted to occur in year 20 or year 30 or year 40? In other words, I can't imagine this site is going to be fully functional in 10 or 15 years. It may well be functional in 25 years.
Well, it certainly won't approach that level in 10 to 15 years. Safe on that one. But, I mean, I don't know.
No. But we don't know.
And there's nothing in any of the assessments as to what will occur at the different stages. This is the maximum operation that will happen.
Yeah,
this is the maximum busy hour that will happen in 50 years' time.
And it's a necessary assessment, but my point is that it's an unsophisticated assessment in the sense that the model may well have variables that are year 20, year 30, year 40, year 50. And so the potential is that the people who live there now will not experience it for a very significant time, if at all, in their lifetime.
Except what the reason for this is the freight hub and the railway shunting yards.
Yeah.
And once that is established, they will then experience that noise, which will happen very early at stage one. I would say.
And so stage one with the shunting, but doesn't that also functionally related to when you're using the metric that you're describing, which is the 1 hour, isn't character and intensity or intensity very important to those calculations?
Yes, and distances as well. And what I'm saying is this will be developed first and these people will be the first to experience it. So if the log yard doesn't go ahead, freight yards don't go ahead, the people to the west are much further away and will experience less of a change, but it's these people in Sangster's Road who will experience the noise early and at its worst.
Well, I understand your point that they'll experience the character of that noise, What I'm not so certain about is whether they'll experience the levels approaching the worst case estimate to that degree, because it will be functioning related to how the model estimates the intensity of shunting, and that will depend on volumes.
Yep.
And volumes may be estimated here based on a 50-year projection, 100-year projection. It's simply unknown.
Yes. I don't.
We don't know what the model numbers
certainly
are.
Certainly don't. Yep.
So would it be correct then to say that these levels are not likely to emerge in 15 years, but beyond that, it's possible but subject to freight intensity?
Yes.
And so my question that follows, sorry, Commissioners, I'm just, because it's natural to come out, I just want to explore this. The concept of these categorizations, B, C, so forth, and their narrative description don't necessarily translate into people's experience or what they think is important or difficult. They're useful categorizations, but at the end, individuals respond differently or are affected by noise differently. That's the psychoacoustic reality, isn't it?
Yes, and it's the, you have a bell curve of different people responding differently.
Yeah. So if 10 houses, in your experience, if there are 10 houses that might experience on a bell curve to some people unacceptable effects but others not, in the natural cycle of the market of trading, won't there be people who are less susceptible or less concerned about those things, willing to purchase or acquire those properties themselves with that knowledge? I mean, in other words, is it truly correct to say if to some extent people's experience or response to noise is different, that in 10 or 15 years when these noise levels are occurring, there is going to be a significant effect? Recognise that average houses change hands every 7 years, all those things. How do we grapple with that complexity in terms of our evaluation of it?
Yeah.
It's not like a classic situation where you're saying, well, here's an activity, it's going to be established immediately, it's going to have this effect and da-da-da-da-da. This has got a lot of variables in play.
Mm. I mean, the only answer I've got for that is that we do have to protect people against themselves.
Mm.
And I get a call a month from people who... And the conversation goes along the lines of, I've bought a house next to a busy road and it's too noisy. What can I do about it?
Yeah.
And it's like, buy another house somewhere else,
because
you're never gonna fix it.
No. But
but translating that to this situation, if the site's not even there, and people, I mean, I've got people at Turitea who have built a house since the since it was consented, and it's like, I didn't know a wind farm was going there. Now they're building it, you know. So this is what we're up against.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I'm rather hopeful that Turitea will be.
You and me both.
Not like some other wind farms, but the limits of regulation. There are limits to what regulation can achieve to protect people from themselves, and there's freedoms. Isn't the 65 absolute limit and the noise boundary the right tools for this situation?
Just be careful with the 65, because it's really a 65, 60 and 55 day, evening, night criteria. So when you go to an airport and you have an air noise contour, it's 65, but it's LDN, and the nighttime noise gets penalised by 10 decibels.
Mm.
So 60, it's easy It's easy just to write off and say 65, you know, but really it's for Palmerston North Airport, for example, the air noise boundary is 65 during the day and 55 at night, averaged over the whole day and then over 3 months. But for here, what we're saying is, well, the criteria that Dr. Charles has put forward is that 65, 55, 65, 60, 55, day, evening, night, is a criteria above which residential amenity is significantly adversely affected and shouldn't be provided to go ahead.
Except that he does provide, in response to that, proposals for mitigation in respect to the nighttime levels.
But he says that for B, category B, but he doesn't say that for category C. He just says... freight hub noise is likely to be incompatible with residential activity. For B, he says, category B, houses may need to be acoustically treated and mechanically ventilated as necessary to meet a level of 35 decibels in bedrooms and 40 decibels in other habitable spaces. So while you're right, if a house was exposed to 60 decibels outside, you want to get it down to 35 decibels inside a bedroom, you've got to reduce the noise by 25 decibels, and that's doable as far as noise insulation is concerned with the windows closed. Mm. So you're right, for noise insulating dwellings in the category C area, theoretically you can do it. But it's not as if you go from 65 to 63 and it's suddenly all right, you know.
Yeah. No, I can now see where you're the conundrum.
Even daytime noise levels at, you know, 60 decibels, it's going to be potentially, there'll be times there where it's, you know, some people, you know, will get on with doing what they're doing, and, you know, if they're a mechanic and inside a building and working on cars and things like that, it won't be an issue, you know. Other people who enjoy currently enjoy the relatively quiet rural environment there, you know, that'll be a big impact when that happens.
Mm.
And that's the other point, really, is that what's there now is really nice, relatively quiet. I mean, there's trains go by, there's railway roads there, and, you know, there's the airport down the road. There's construction work on the northeast industrial zone. So there's a plethora of activity taking place now. But generally, it's rural and it's quiet, especially, you know, in the evening and at night time when things drop away.
Mm. So on that point, the NIMT is excluded from that calculation.
Yes.
And are you saying in the conditions it should be included?
Well, I don't want to control the noise from the main trunk line. I'm not saying, you know, you can only have one train an hour or something like that. But turning it round, what I'm saying is, look, if we are going to noise insulate these dwellings, we should noise insulate it against all the noise that's coming from the designation, which includes the noise of the trains going straight through. It's silly not to include those.
Yeah, and that's something that worried me about the way... There's something I felt a little uncomfortable with the way Dr. Charles was analysing the need and sufficiency of response. It sort of seems slightly ungenerous in terms of when you're going to go and I wonder whether the conditions needed to be more an independent acoustic consultant actually providing the services for the landowners to make sure that they got... Because I don't think you'd want to be niggardly about the type of retrofitting that should be imposed for these people. Do you agree with that?
No, absolutely.
And so your point is that if if you're going to do that, you should consider the NIMT composition as well, because that's the only rational way to proceed.
It's hard. I can't see how you can argue against it. You're right. Yeah. It's like arguing black's white, you know.
I understand that. I think that's a good point. We've gone a long way from where you were. I think you're on paragraph 33.
I think I've dealt with a few of these points now.
Just modify as you see fit.
Yeah.
So I've dealt down to noise barriers probably.
Right.
Take that as read.
Yeah.
So, looking at
that point about special audible characteristics, you're sticking with the standard.
Yes.
And Dr. Charles and other environments like standards.
He does.
Often co-authors
and
them.
And he loves to stick to them.
And so he is sticking to the standard now?
I hope he's on there.
We can have a dig at him because he's not here.
Yeah, but he's listening. yes. Let's stick to the standard.
Before you move on and talk about noise barriers, Mr. Lloyd, what is the summary of that discussion on operational noise? What would you have the panel do in response to the concerns you've raised?
So where we're going to get now as far as noise insulation is concerned, we're going to provide for a trigger on the basis of design reports will be done annually, which is Section 42A recommendation anyway, and that for 1 year ahead you work out, right, are we going to trigger noise insulation? Are we going to exceed 55 during the day and 45 at night? And what I'd like to see, the ideal situation would be, okay, if you're going to exceed, say, 55 at night, then maybe Kiwi Rail should start talking to people about those people about where that's going to occur, or you know, 60 dBA during the evening, and have a trigger for discussions about whether they want to sell or, you know, that sort of. I mean. Again, it's the lapse period which is the worrying one, is that these people are stuck in limbo for 15 years. And well, that because there is a significant effect on these people's predicted to be and allowed on these people's dwellings, normally you say, well, you don't look at valuations of houses. I've heard it all the time, you know, because we're dealing with the adverse effects. And you can't deal with the adverse effects and then say there's going to be a reduction in the value of your property. But for the next 15 years, there's predictions and allowance in these conditions that the noise levels will be significant on these dwellings, on these properties. You know, does that mean that these people are going to get a reduction in valuation of their property? I think it's for level two effects that I heard in legal submissions. And if that's the case, is that fair that they're going to, you know, not be able to sell their houses or have to sell them at a reduced price? So that's the thing that I can't work out how we deal with that. I can only get to when the noise arrives, and I'm an acoustic consultant, I suppose I should stick to acoustic consultancy, but when the noise arises, you know, then we can deal with it. But if the noise is too high, maybe we should be looking at, or maybe Kiwi Rail should be looking at discussing with those people about, do you want to sell your house? But what happens in the meantime, I'm not sure.
As a matter of interest, do the noise limits at the site boundary exclude sites that are owned by Kiwi Rail? So if, for example, through that process of defining the boundaries, they find there are a couple of properties that will exceed the condition limits, that the fact that those limits apply won't apply if KiwiRail own the site?
No, because it applies at the noise boundary. We have a boundary that it's got to
meet.
No.
These are the six. That's the 65.
Well, you'd think they buy the places, do them up, noise insulate them, and then sell them with the covenant or something along those lines.
Mm.
So people know what they're coming to.
Yeah, but that limit shouldn't then apply to those.
But it doesn't
sites.
Apply to the houses. It's not a notional boundary condition. It applies at the designation boundary.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Yes.
And at the noise management boundary.
I see. I've got you.
So there's no... You can't keep moving your... And I'm not a great one for moving your noise limits further from the site, because that generates higher noise levels for people further away, which they're not signing up for now.
Mm. Well, that's a good question that Commissioner Sweetman's asking then, isn't it? Like, is there some beefing up of the condition around noise insulation that you would like to see that's more anticipatory?
I think the noise, what we're providing for now as far as noise conditions, I think as far as noise insulation, I think works fine. As long as I do have a difference of opinion with Dr. Charles on what the criteria should be for the noise insulation. So I think it should be the maximum noise levels allowed, provided for by these contours. Mm. So it should be, you should say, right, 65 at the boundary, 55 at the noise management boundary, and then that provides for a 45 decibel further out. So those should be the maximum noise levels that are allowed. Now, if a dwelling gets exposed to a noise level over 45 at night, that'll trigger the criteria. But for that dwelling, you should then assume that the noise level is the maximum that would be allowed by our conditions. And so you'd say, right, well, it's on the 55 contour, so you should reduce that from 55 decibels down to 35 decibels in bedrooms.
I guess what I'm thinking about is whether the conditions need to be slightly granular in the sense of identifying the houses where noise mitigation or acoustic treatment should be required at particular times or so forth, as opposed to when it's predicted to have this effect or whatever.
The difficulty is with the stages as they increase. So with stage one, it may be houses over here, and stage two, it may be houses over here, or the maintenance schedule might go in, you know, not till 2080 or something like that. So the difficulty is in identifying those dwellings now. And the only way around that is to say, right, once you've done your detailed design, then you come up with then you can predict what the noise levels are for all of the dwellings, and then we have a trigger for which ones need to be noise insulated now, and we noise insulate them to the maximum assumed noise levels.
So recognising all of that and your acceptance that the designation extension isn't the right tool.
Yes.
Is it your evidence that what is contained in the 29 September conditions for the council is the best you can do with a bad lot?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
In other words, there are trade-offs, there are compromises, but best you can do with the tools and things so forth, that would be that, and the panel should accept that the consequence of adopting those conditions is at least 10 houses that will be subjected to a loss of oral amenity that makes you uncomfortable and would not be normally what you would recommend for management of activities.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I think that's
good.
Just is what it is. You've got to call it as it is. All right. So any other questions from that, or can we move to noise barriers? Thank you.
Hang on.
No more questions from that, Commissioner Marson, but can we have a five-minute stretch, please?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Before Lloyd continues.
Yeah, so we'll be back here at 12:25.